Hello, everyone, and thank you for listening to the latest Health Innovation Network podcast. For this episode, we are celebrating International Women's Day, and I couldn't think of two better women to be talking with for this podcast. The theme for the 2026 International Women's Day is Give to Gain. So today we're reflecting on what we can give to the advancement of women's health and what potential gains they are. And we're going to talk about both of those. And we as a network are committed to ensuring that women are supported as leaders, founders, and innovators across health and care. So I'm really looking forward to the discussion. We're going to be touching on a whole range of things that would last a lot longer than this short podcast, but we'll do our best. We're going to take a little bit of a dive into the recently published Health Innovation Network report, Forging a More Equitable Future, Innovation in Women's Health, which is available to download from our website. Marianne and I had the pleasure of working together on a roundtable that led to that report. We'll be discussing some of the recommendations made in the report and some of the optimism we have around the future. Just to give you a little spoiler alert while you rush to download it, there were three key recommendations. The first one was using women's health reform to really drive economic and workforce productivity. There's a lot going out there around women's health reform. So how can we use that meaningfully and think about that productivity angle? The second one was prioritise improving women's health through innovation. Of course, Marianne and I would be biased in saying that, but we hope we're going to be able to show you the things that we're excited about around that. And really, that can also be used as a vehicle for delivering the three shifts. And finally, thinking about tackling health inequalities, an area we're both passionate about as well, and thinking about how we incentivise prioritising women's health. So in a few minutes, we're going to hear from our guest speaker, Baroness Gillian Meron, who is Minister for Women's Health and Mental Health, who sent us some excellent insights to answer some of our questions. But firstly, I want to do a few introductions. So I'm your host. My name's Dominique Allwood. I'm Chief Executive of Imperial College Health Partners, the Health Innovation Network for Northwest London. My background is in public health, where I also spend a day a week in the NHS working as a public health physician. It's a rare opportunity, but delighted to be able to have a chance to have a conversation with both a friend and a colleague, Dr. Marianne Farrow, who is Chief Medical Officer for Health Innovation, Kent, Surrey and Sussex. Marianne, briefly, just tell us a little bit about your role and your interests, I guess, and how your role relates to women's health.
Yeah, thank you so much, Dom. And it's such a pleasure to be able to speak to you today about such an important topic. As you mentioned, I'm the Chief Medical Officer at Health Innovation, Kent, Surrey and Sussex. I'm also a non-exec director of two NHS trusts, a community trust and a mental health trust. And that, has really given me some insight on the ground as to how women's health and gender inequalities are really playing out on the ground for our local communities. So, you know, we've been really privileged to be running a women's health strategy for the last 3 years at our Health Innovation Network. And it'd be great to be able to talk through some of the insights that we've had in that work and just generally be able to advocate for more to be done around women's health in general. We've got so much work to do, and the more people we can engage in that action, the better.
Brilliant. So delighted to have you with all of your expertise, and we'll get into a bit more of that in a moment. Firstly, we are delighted to welcome Baroness Gillian Meron to this episode, who starts by introducing herself and then explains why she thinks innovation is so important to women's health.
I'm Baroness Gillian Meron, and I'm the Minister for Women's Health and Mental Health. As Minister for Women's Health, my role very much sits at the very heart of what is the commitment of this government to make sure that every woman in this country gets the healthcare she deserves. What does that mean? Well, it means championing women's health all across the system. So whether we're talking about improving access to contraception, whether we're talking about tackling gynecological waiting lists, and whether we're talking about making sure that women's voices are properly heard in how we design and how we deliver the services that affect them. And so my role overall is to drive that change, the right kind of change, because I firmly believe that a woman's health should not be determined by where she lives, what her background is, or indeed whether she was believed and listened to by her doctor. Every woman deserves the right healthcare in the right way at the right time for her.
So let's get started. And in keeping with this year's theme for International Women's Day,
Give to Gain, Baroness Merrin gives us an overview on gains she recognises that are being made in women's health through innovation.
Well, we're already making real progress with innovation. So we've cut gynaecological waiting lists. We've made emergency hormonal contraception free in pharmacies. And through Martha's Rule and Jess's Rule, we're making sure that women's voices are heard, and not just heard, important though that is, but also acted on at the very time it matters most. I was, in a good way, staggered at the positive reception to when we announced we were including a question about menopause in the NHS health checks, because that does mean we can support women sooner. In my view, health is absolutely key, but this one isn't just about health, it's about the economy. If we support women properly throughout menopause, they can stay in work longer, they'll perform at their best, their lives will be better on every level, and they can fully take part in the workforce. Because if we don't do that, we'll lose productivity, we'll lose women in jobs that they love, we'll lose so many skills and contributions. Well, that's a cost that is just enormous. It's a cost for the individual, it's a cost for the economy. So if we get it right for women, we'll be getting it right for the country. So I'm very keen on how we're renewing the women's health strategy, because innovation and women's voices will be absolutely at the heart of our design and our delivery of care for women for years to come.
So it's really great to hear about some of the progress that's been made, in particular Martha's Rule, which is really important, and the Health Innovation Network is, of course, involved in the delivery of that work. Marianne and I will discuss progress being made in women's health and the historical context of that progress a little later. For now, let's hear where Baroness Merrin thinks innovation could have the greatest gains in relation to women's health.
We're going to be launching shortly our renewed women's health strategy, and that will set out how we're going to use innovation to improve women's health. So that will include new diagnostic technologies, it will include digital tools and advances in research, because all of those have absolutely the power to transform outcomes for women. And I would also add that innovation means new ways of delivering care and designing services where women are at the absolute centre. What do I want to see? I want us to be a world leader in women's health innovation, and our women's health strategy will provide the framework for how we get there.
Thank you to Baroness Merrin for talking about all of that fantastic work that's going on, in particular the renewal of the women's health strategy, which I know is really welcomed. So Marianne, let's get into some of the issues around why it's important to prioritise women's health, and I guess with a bit of a focus about why innovation is important in women's health.
Yeah, thanks, Dom. And it was great to hear from Baroness Merrin around some of the things that are happening, particularly around the women's health strategy for England. But the reality is that women's health is historically underfunded, under-researched and underserved. So although women represent 51% of the population, we know that women's health outcomes lag significantly behind men, and particularly in areas such as cardiovascular disease, which is actually the biggest killer of women. And I think that that just represents the gap that we're talking about. In my own region, in Kent and Medway, when I look at women's health, that there's a really stark reality with where I live, which is in East Kent. Women live 19 years less than other parts of Kent. And I think these are some of the things where there are clearly wicked issues that need to be solved. And I think that innovation has a really strong part to play in how we can move that forward and design and develop a future that's really equitable for everybody.
Thank you. And I guess this growth in the area of what people describe as femtech is really starting to show that supporting women's health can really improve health outcomes and start to reduce inequalities and deliver economic benefits. So let's dive into a bit more about what we're thinking around. Innovation is a big subject, as is women's health. And I guess there's about three or four areas that come to top of my mind that I know you're particularly involved in some of those. And so one of those is how we remove bias from research. Another one is about how we really focus on scaling the adoption of the solutions that focus particularly on women's health, something that we're both really passionate about around building inclusive leadership cultures and thinking very much about then some of the levers around that, about creating fairer access to funding and really helping that pipeline of women, female founders and leaders who are coming through the innovation space. So tell us a little bit more about touching on some of the work you're leading. I know that you're doing work locally in terms of your Women's Health Research Network. I know that there's lots in there. What might you pick out some of the areas that you're thinking about?
Yeah, so I think you've covered some really important areas. And some of the areas that we've focused on at our HIN, so one of them has been in relation to AI. So I think we know that we're heading into a future where AI, and in particular sort of agentic AI, is going to play quite a big part in terms of healthcare delivery. We know that in the 10-year plan, there's a move from analog to digital. There's talk around the NHS app really becoming, the person's sort of pocket access to the front door of healthcare. So with all of these changes coming, I think if we're not careful, we could very well embed the inequalities that we already see and bake them into sort of that new system. And I think that, you know, we also need to be really aware that a lot of the AI algorithms that are being created are using that clinical data set where we've already just said women, you know, haven't participated or haven't been included. And so, you know, it's very much sort of baking in that research bias into those future algorithms. And so I think that's a really huge part that we can play as a health innovation network, is to bring that awareness both from a policy perspective, but also to those innovators that we work with, so that they're really cognizant of the bias and inequalities that exist in the system, and therefore, you know, work to mitigate the risks that have already been identified. So that's sort of one area that I think is really important. The other that you talked about is femtech. And, you know, we definitely think that femtech has potential to really actually accelerate economic growth for the country. We know, for example, that the gynecology waiting list is the largest waiting list in England, which means that there are thousands of women who are not, you know, who are waiting for their treatment, not able to access care, and potentially not able to go back to work or to do the work that they need to do, which obviously has an impact on our economy. So I think there's huge potential in femtech, in supporting women founders to actually develop solutions by women for women that really meet the needs that have been articulated by our women's groups, you know, across the region. So I think that's really exciting way that we can move forward. And then finally, sort of going back to that research piece, if we don't change the data, then, you know, we aren't going to be able to build that sort of new future that we're all aspiring to create. So you know, making sure that in all of our clinical trials, for example, you know, there's some form of a mandate around that 50% need to be, you know, women within those clinical trials, and then getting even further than that and actually thinking about broader diversity and women from more marginalized groups being included in that data set as well. So I think there's a huge amount to do around research, both in clinical trials, both in researching things like menopause, which have been historically underfunded, things around endometriosis, which still has 8 years, an average wait of 8 years for diagnosis, things around treatments around PCOS. So there's a huge amount of women's health issues that affect people on a day-to-day basis where we don't have enough research to have a really comprehensive evidence base for clinical practice.
And it's so stark when you tell us there's some of those things around waiting times for diagnosis, et cetera. And we all have mothers, sisters, nieces, daughters, people are facing these problems every day. I guess within that mix, though, really important to think about diversity across this. Women's health can sometimes be at risk of being sort of categorized or lumped into one box or bucket. And within the category around women's health, there's huge amounts of diversity, thinking about inclusion across ethnicity, disability, socioeconomic status, geography, all sorts of things that get into the mix of that. So I guess it's really important to be thinking about that as we do. And I know it's an area you and I are both deeply passionate about. Let's move on a little bit. I mean, we've already touched on it, actually. So I guess if there's anything additional to say, really helpful to hear. But you and I are both passionate about making sure that we go beyond polishing problems. And we see that quite a lot where people have, I guess, increasingly started to talk about the issues that are faced. You've touched now into what needs to happen to really deliver change. And Baroness Merrin has also talked about some of that. But tell us about, I guess, how we build some of the evidence base that starts to bring more rigor into this work and really demonstrate some of that clinical and economic benefit around some of these innovations so we can be really certain about that concrete evidence that is undisputable about what needs to change.
Yeah, I think that there's still, you know, I'm still having conversations every day that demonstrate the bias that actually sits within the system. So when we talk about women's health, I still have people tell me, what about men's health? You know, as if we've got to choose one over the other. I still hear people sort of talk about EDI in terms of, you know, it's an additional extra that, you know, of course, from a moral perspective, you know, it's really important and it's a social justice issue, but actually it's not really core business. It's an add-on. So I think that there are some clear sort of biases that exist. I think we need to be cognizant of those. And then I think we need to reframe how we're actually kind of pitching the work that we're trying to do. And so I think what's been really great in working with you, Dom, around that roundtable was moving it from it being sort of a moralistic argument to being much more about, well, what is the economic and the financial narrative that actually sits around this? Why is addressing women's health actually important to everybody? And looking at it much more from kind of an investment strategy rather than from, you know, the social justice perspective. I do think everybody wants to do the right thing. However, I think the reality of our situation with the system is it's under huge financial constraint. And, you know, we need to be able to convince people through our argument around the need to change and to have that burning platform. So, I think, you know, the gynecology waitlist is a clear outcome measure of what's not working for women. And that's certainly something that I think we need to lever when we have those conversations with industry and with our innovators so that we're actually designing solutions around those key system problems and having wins that are for women themselves, for our clinicians who are, you know, working under really strained situations and in strained environments, and also more broadly for the system in terms of access to acute care, re-presentations, things like that. So I think there's opportunity for there to be wins across the board. And going back to your point, Dom, I really think it's the leadership that's really critical in being able to really move this forward and making sure that when we're in those sort of decision-making rooms, we have diversity of thought around the decision-making table. I think there are a lot of echo chambers that sit across sort of policy making or commissioning. And again, that's something that we really need to break down those barriers in order to really support these changes moving forwards.
Thanks, Marianne. I mean, there's so much rich stuff in there. You've touched on so many things. If I had a little clipboard, I'd be writing my checklist of stuff that I need to go out and think about. I guess people often think about where's the place to start. And you and I think, would argue that data is really important. So as we're starting to look at policy around trying to deliver the three shifts and see where we are in terms of baseline and where we're trying to get to, that data point is also really important. How do we disaggregate a lot of the activity and outcomes that we're seeing by gender in the same way that we started to do a bit more around ethnicity, around socioeconomic status? So that's definitely something I'd also throw in there. And I know you're doing lots of work in that. I guess I also just wanted to touch on the role of sort of policy, and that it can be a slightly dry word that puts people off. But, you know, it's really important to think about what the role of policy is around being some of the potential levers in this space. And I guess my simple brain thinks about buckets around capital, capability, and a bit around procurement. And I saw this incredible stat around the Rose Reviews found that if women had started and scaled new businesses in the UK at the same rate as men, we could add £250 billion to the UK economy. So thinking about some of that investor confidence and supporting women around the targeted capital and some of the mechanisms to do that, thinking about the decision making, I guess some of the capability building stuff, you said leadership is really important. How do we support women through some of that mentorship, accelerators, formal programs, informal support? Lots in there for us to all be thinking about around some of the bigger contextual things that support that. Listen, we could talk for ages, Marianne, but we are drawing almost to a close. I've got one more question for you. And I wanted to ask you what gives you the most optimism about women's health work that you're looking at and into the future, I guess.
You know, I think that the strategy has been, you know, a game changer in terms of that. I'm talking about the NHS, you know, the England strategy for women's health has been a game changer in bringing this conversation to the fore and giving it sort of the light of day, and then having the sort of subsequent investment into women's health hubs has really enabled it to move from being quite a niche, a section of things that we talk about in relation to, you know, clinical pathways, to being sort of front and center in terms of what do we need to do to actually address some of those poor health outcomes that we're currently seeing, and the opportunities that are available in a collaborative process. So I feel incredibly encouraged around what the future looks like. I think we are having much better conversations around it. And the women, across academia, founders, innovators, clinicians, patients and public involvement groups that I've met, really are driving this advocacy forward. I feel like there's a movement for change, and I think whenever that happens, things tend to accelerate. So I'm really excited for what this brings. I think the renewed strategy is very welcome, and I think it's really up to us as leaders in this space to and women in this space to come together and really take this forward with purpose and action. So it's great that we've been able to kind of showcase this on International Women's Day. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to what that future holds.
Amazing. So much passion and optimism, of which sometimes, I guess, in health and care, we find ourselves in rooms that feel a bit more gloomy than that. So I would 100% agree. I feel like it's really reaching a tipping point, as you say, that advocacy that's going on with women like you who are sort of really leading the charge. And it makes me feel really confident that we are both managing to showcase this as a major health equity issue, but as well as a significant opportunity to tackle, as well as bringing in some of that lens of wider economic activity and the role of innovation. And I think there is really an increasing amount of attention from policymakers, researchers, innovators, a whole bunch of people who are coming together. And we are often, you know, thinking about where are these challenges where we need the intersection of so many different people from different backgrounds, different parts of the sectors to come together, and this is one of those classic places.
And now we'll hear a final word from Baroness Merrin about what gives her the most optimism for the future.
I'm most optimistic about a shift, and it's a shift in the conversation that's already happening. It's a shift in terms of women of all types, all ages, in all locations across the country are speaking up, and they are being heard, and they are demanding better. And the system is starting to listen properly. See, it's one thing to listen, it's another thing to act. And so I am feeling much more optimistic. Research is catching up. Attitudes are changing. And by renewing the Women's Health Strategy, I think we're actually grasping that real opportunity to turn what is a momentum into something real and lasting and structural that will change things for the better.
We're delighted that you've managed to tune in. Thank you all for listening to this special International Women's Day edition, an important day, hopefully a podcast that helps mark that day with some ideas and inspiration. We're really delighted to the Health Innovation Network for enabling us to help do this. And we're hoping that you can listen back to other podcasts on our website. Do make sure you go and download the report, Forging a More Equitable Future, Innovation in Women's Health, on our website. And please do give this podcast a share on social media. There's an International Women's Day official hashtag, which is #GiveToGain. And if you share it on LinkedIn, don't forget to tag the Health Innovation Network and Marianne and myself, and leave your comments so we can join in the discussion online. Thanks so much for listening, and have a fantastic day.